Hello, homemakers. Welcome to the Art of Home podcast, where we are exploring how homemakers cultivate a place to belong. I'm your host, Allison Weeks. I am a wife, mom, granny, and I've been practicing the art of home for over 30 years. Happy New Year and welcome to season 18. I have been off the air for a while, taking a nice long winter break, and I'm so glad I listened to the Holy Spirit prompting me to take all of January off because I needed it. I ended up with 2.5 weeks of sickness followed by 2 weeks of terrible weather, so I have had lots of time to spend in my home over the past month. I did a lot of reading, I caught up on my favorite YouTube channels, I puttered around the house on projects, and I had the slowest Christmas takedown in the history of my homemaking. Actually, as I'm recording this, there are still several garlands that need to come down, but at least they're pretty neutral, they're evergreen, so I'm not too mad about it. If you're new here, I just want to say a great big welcome and that I'm so glad that you found us. Here at The Art of Home, we are all about encouraging each other to practice our homemaking as an art with confidence, skill, joy, and creativity. So we do that through homemaker portraits in which I interview women of all ages about their experiences in homemaking. And we do that also through our deep dive episodes where we focus on a particular topic or skill or concept related to homemaking. And we have all of that coming in season 18. We have seasoned in the trenches and newbie homemaker portraits. And next week, we will be diving deep into how we can respond during emergencies in the home with my friend and former guest, Elizabeth Dillard, who is a paramedic firefighter. We also will be resuming our free weekly newsletter, Homemaker Happy Mail, coming this Friday. If you are not familiar with our newsletter, it's an additional weekly dose of homemaking encouragement that highlights what's happening on the podcast, as well as any of the resources, including recipes, that are shared by that week's podcast guest, and additional writing that sometimes will be from me and sometimes from other homemakers. It's totally free to sign up. Just go to theartofhomepodcast.com/subscribe and make sure to add us to your trusted contacts so we don't end up in your junk folder. Well, last fall, I started sharing a bit about what's happening in my homemaking at the beginning of each episode. I thought I would continue to do that this year, as it is a great way for you to get to know me, your host, a little bit better, and for me to share what I'm learning and loving in my own homemaking each week. I have even created a little segue. It's time for Allison's Update, the part of the podcast where I tell you what is happening in my home and what homemaking resources I am loving lately. This week's update is brought to you by listeners who support the art of home through Buy Me a Coffee. Buy Me a Coffee is a virtual tip jar where you can show your appreciation and support for the show by giving a one-time tip or becoming a Titus II Woman supporter and setting up a recurring tip of $5 a month. Whichever way you choose to give, I am grateful for your support. Besides recovering from sickness and taking down Christmas, I have spent my time lately decluttering and organizing throughout my home. I love to start the year with a clean slate, and that includes my freezer and my pantry. So pantry challenges are really popular in the homemaking internet world, particularly at the beginning of the year, and for good reason. We want to practice good stewardship. And with food prices where they are today, we certainly don't want to let food go to waste by getting lost in the bottom of the freezer or the back of the pantry. The first step of my pantry challenge was to go through all of my food storage and take a detailed inventory of what I had. I literally wrote everything down. I also got rid of expired items as I was taking that inventory. My goal then was to work through as much of that food as I could for the month of January, particularly the meat and the frozen leftovers. Now, I did not commit to a no-buy January, as some do. However, I did commit to not buying any more protein, but instead to work through what we already had, even if it's not our favorite. Once I had my inventory list, I made a list of possible meals that I could make from that inventory with little to no additional purchases required. As I used things up throughout the month, I crossed them off my inventory list, and while we didn't use everything, we made a sizable dent and we were able to feed ourselves really well for a month. I really enjoyed the challenge of doing this. It forced me to be more creative in my meal planning, and I believe will help train me to shop more mindfully in the coming year so I don't have so much excess of certain things. I will definitely do this again, at least once a year, maybe even twice. I'm thinking that a summer pantry challenge would be a good thing as well to make room for things that I want to preserve from the bounty of the summertime. I highly encourage you to do some kind of pantry challenge, even if it's just for 1 week. See if you can make a week's worth of meals from what you already have in your home. I would love to hear from you if you have questions about my pantry challenge or if you have ideas to share from doing this yourself. You can get in touch with me at theartofhomepodcast.com/contact. I will be sharing more about my personal pantry challenge in this week's Homemaker Happy Mail. That goes out on Friday morning, so be sure to sign up soon. Now on to today's show. I am chatting with Bethany Kimsey, seasoned homemaker and mom of 8. I have been following Bethany on Instagram for a few years, and I have enjoyed her content immensely. She has so much wisdom to share about homemaking, parenting, prayer, and following Jesus through it all. She is the host of Warrior Mama Podcast. She is wife to Troy for 27 years, and she has a passion for helping women take hold of the gospel and confidently apply it in their motherhood. This is a delightful and encouraging conversation, and I am so glad you have joined us. Thank you for trusting me with your valuable time today. I pray it will be a good investment for you. Whatever you are applying your hands to as you listen, I know you will enjoy Bethany's story of home. Okay, welcome to The Art of Home. I am here with my new friend, Bethany Kimsey, and Bethany is going to tell us all about her journey as a seasoned homemaker, but we're going to start from the beginning. Before we do that, I want to hear a little bit from you, Bethany. Just introduce yourself to the audience. Let us know a little bit about who you are today, and what your life is like.
Sure. Thanks, Allison. I'm happy to be here. I am married to my husband, Troy, and we have been married for 27 years. And then we are also the parents of 8 children. And their ages range from the oldest is 25 and the youngest is 8. And people always love to ask, do you have twins? And the answer is no. And are they all yours? And I'm like, of course, they're all mine. Even if they didn't come from me, they happen to have all come from me. But yes, they're all mine. And yeah, so that's kind of where we are. We live down in Georgia, and that's about it.
Okay. All right. Well, let's go back to the beginning. And why don't you just tell us about when you feel like you first became a homemaker? And when you did you have any skills?
I saw that question and I thought, no, I had no skills. I had nothing. And that's not a reflection on poor parenting. Like, I don't want to at all imply that was something that my parents did poorly. It really was more, I think I didn't really maybe value learning any of it when I was growing up. I mean, I just wasn't watching, and it wasn't explicitly said, hey, you should learn these things. So right. I didn't ever think, oh, I should take notes here. So I came into marriage and it was, I believe, like from the beginning, you kind of step into homemaking, whether you have children or not. It is part of, you are just doing a family, and you are because you're married. Like your family is your marriage, and so no, I lacked in all fronts, and it was humbling, but also for me kind of exciting, like. I began to go, wait a minute, this is like something I could, you know, I can learn how to do this. I think I'm going to like it in my own speed, in my own way. And so, yeah, I began to learn.
Okay. What area did you tackle first? Was it sort of like what was necessary? I mean, that's what you had to address, like feeding people. I have to feed people.
Yeah, I had to learn how to cook. I didn't know how to cook anything. And there were lots of things that, especially when I was a young, because I got married at, I just turned 23. And there was lots of things. Like, I was still like almost, like, I didn't like to eat certain things either. Still, like, you know, you have from childhood, like, you're like, I don't eat those kinds of foods. Those are gross. So I still was in kind of that kind of a more immature state. So I distinctly remember, like, realizing with my first child, somebody said, well, you know, you can, like, scrambled eggs are a good food to give a baby. And I was like, ugh, because eggs are gross to me. So, like, I remember realizing I don't know how to cook an egg at all. Like, any kind of cooking, I couldn't hard boil. Like, I didn't know how to boil an egg, scramble an egg. I didn't know how to do anything with an egg other than stick it in a cookie or a cake.
Yeah.
Like, you could put it in a different part of a recipe. So, yeah, I wasn't super skilled. So it was, I think for me, cooking was probably the first, because where we were and how, when I married my husband, the way even our roles played out, I was the one working and earning the money for us, and he was in medical school. So his time was really compressed, and he wasn't home to even try the role of cooking. Like, it just, it wasn't there for him. So it was like, well, one of us has to figure this out, because we are also very poor and we cannot be eating out because nobody can cook.
Right, right. Exactly. Oh, that's so interesting. So how long did you work? Well, we might get to that in a minute, but so did you work until he was done with medical school, or when did you?
I worked. So he went through he finished medical school, and then he went into residency. There was a year in there where I stayed home with our first child for a year. And then financially, we had our second child, and I needed to go back to work because of some things that had happened that we just would sink if I didn't. So then my career was such that I could work. I was a pediatric physical therapist. And so I could, in essence, take certain number of clients. And so I molded what I did around, like, Mother's Day out, and fit it in cracks and crevices, and basically worked enough for the next 5 years to allow us to make budget.
Okay. Okay. Yeah.
That's how we did it.
That's you do what you got to do. So, yeah. It sounds like you tackled the cooking because you had to eat and you couldn't afford to eat out. what was something else that you had a real steep learning curve for? I mean, because the job of a homemaker is, we are wearing so many hats, you know,
so many.
We're doing the cooking, the budgeting, the everything. So what was something you had another real steep learning curve for, and how did you kind of overcome that?
So one thing I want to let anybody who listens to this hear is I come in. My personality is I have a great affinity for fun. It tends to, in my personality, also lead towards disorganization. So I am not an organized person. I also don't have many skill sets. What I've learned in my own homemaking is I kind of lack the skills to know how to organize something. So when I am even standing, I don't know, let's say in front of a task or a pantry or like those initial, like, how am I going to put this together skills are hard for me. And so if they're hard for you, I want you to know it's okay. But it doesn't negate the need to like learn or to grow. And so for me, what was beginning to happen is number one, I had to recognize, wow, these things are all going to be hard for me because they kind of require something that you don't naturally possess, Bethany. So you're going to have to step inside of a learning posture and find out from others and put your ear out and be listening, because otherwise we're all going to be living in chaos. And I didn't like chaos. I wasn't comfortable in chaos, but once your mess is multiplied by just one other person, you know, and then you begin to add kids to the bunch and it multiplies just exponentially, then there is a requirement for order. And then I had naturally, of course, I don't know if it's it's definitely God's grace, but I had married a man who is highly organized and very precise and very detailed. So this was also a space in our marriage where there was stretching and growing, even going on in the marriage, like relationship, because there's stories there that are super funny. You know, like I would cook meals, and my method of cooking would be to like utterly destroy the kitchen to cook the meal. Like, I mean, every cabinet would be left open because I might, you know, I'm just opening and getting something, leave the doors open, drawers open, cabinet on the bottoms open, the pantry doors open, like everything is out. And then my method was once everything was cooked and we ate it, then I would go in and I would clean everything. Well, that's really hard for somebody who's not that way. And so we have this very, and I totally can share it because it's such a story and like we all laugh of it. It's like our family lore. But he tends to be a thoughtful guy. Like he's not like, and so he was sitting in the kitchen while I was cooking and he was studying, I think, for a board or something. And I'm like utterly blitzing the whole kitchen, probably totally messing with his mindset because he's just watching everything come apart. And he just quietly gets up, goes into the garage, comes back into the kitchen with his battery power drill. And he's like, starts proceeding to take the cabinet doors off. He goes, "You don't use them. You do not use them. I think we should take them off because it's driving me crazy." And I was like, "What? No, no, no." And it was, and he was really being funny. Like he wasn't truly going to take them off. But it was also a space of me going, you know, I mean, I can shut a door. Like I can be thoughtful I can begin to learn a thoughtfulness of not leaving everything in blitz zone. And so there was just growing that needed to happen early on in our marriage. And so it goes across all things for me. So because there was not natural organization anywhere, I really had to just begin to like watch other people and learn and go, "Oh, I'll try that. Oh, I'll try that." Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah. Oh, that's really funny. Thank you for sharing that story. I love that. I love your, what you said, you had to adopt a posture of learning or a learning posture. And I think that through our whole careers and lives, as homemakers, we should be doing that all the time because I'm always learning something new. But I think as you get older, you can kind of get set in your ways. You can kind of get to this place where you're like, I don't need to learn anything new, but always learning, always learning. That's good. So how about the expectations that you brought into married life and homemaking life? How did maybe what you envisioned, what you expected, how did that match up the day-to-day reality?
I think I really had to learn that this wasn't going to be this idyllic experience. So I also, just my personality, I tend to be more in the land of dreaming than in the land of reality. So I had painted a picture of what this was going to look like and how it was going to feel like it was going to feel really good and feel really fun and stimulating and all the things that didn't really always feel that way. So then you kind of say, well, maybe there's dissatisfaction because it's me. Like, you know, you begin to go, well, why am I dissatisfied? And I think learning that the art of homemaking is also even a decision to be engaged in homemaking, that it's, that's part of the beauty is choosing to say, you know, I'm going to engage here. Like I'm going to choose to enjoy this. So we have a saying in our home that you get to choose to enjoy and you get to choose to be annoyed. Like those are choices. They're actually like we can be in a space where somebody else is truly annoying and yet we can choose to lay aside our annoyance. And in the same vein, we can be in a space where it's really demanding and it's really hard and we can choose to be miserable or we can choose to say, I'm going to choose to enjoy this. And so for me, in this learning and growing space, it was, because honestly, for probably the first 5 years, a lot of it was just like stinking hard. And I was then adopting some thinking that wasn't super great. And, you know, God really had to walk me through a realignment of all of that.
Like what kind of thinking?
Well, like just resentment. So when I came into marriage, there was a part of me that thought like certain roles I would do, certain roles he would do, certain roles we would do. And the reality of the way our life was in those first, let me add up all of how many years were we in medical school and residency and fellowship? It was a long time. It was 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, maybe 12 years, the first 12 years of our marriage. He like could take the trash out. Like that was his responsibility because that he could do at 4 a.m. when right. he would be coming in from work around 11 or 12 at night. And he would be having to report to work at around 4 a.m. And those were on the nights he was home. And he was probably gone every other night for 6 months of the year. And it is a lot of being more of a single running everything. So there was a lot of, like, even the disappointment I remember early in our marriage of going, I should not have to handle any of the killing of bugs. Like that is not inside of my zone. It's not my zone. And he would be like, I'm not here to kill the bugs. Like if you want them dead, you have to do it. And we were so poor early on and we had this house that, I mean, the joke was we were renting it from the cockroaches and it was really true. I mean, I finally did. I mean, after losing, like really having a pity party for myself about it, I was like, you're right. Like, I'm going to have to do this. And I'm like, I'm just going to work an extra, I'm going to pick up an extra patient and so that I can have a bug man because I'm not doing this. It's like, no. So learning that if we're really contributing and we're really working together as a team in our marriage, then there's not division of labor as much as there is just serving one another. And my serving, especially in those early years, required that probably I carried the bulk of just life in the home. The one thing that I was seriously not good at, and I am still to this day not good at, and I don't carry this at all inside of the homemaking list, is I don't at all carry our budgeting. I am an agreeing participant in our budget, but there was a season where we tried to let me carry the budgeting reins and it didn't do well. And so for us, in the honesty of our conversations, he's like, yeah, like you're not paying all the bills. And I, you know, genuinely thought I was. I mean, like I had a checklist, like I was trying to work it. But it just that, and so I just want, you know, sometimes we think, oh, well, we have to be 100% good at everything.
Right.
And I think what helps better is, or helps more, is to say, this is an honest conversation and nobody's lesser and nobody's better. And we're working together and to the best of our ability, I'm going to do everything I can. And because part of what I do in the home is loving the people who live in my home. By doing these things. So, yeah.
It's serving one another, not a division of labor. And I think that's so hard. Like, it's so, like, we just want everything to be fair and just and
yeah,
equal, you know? It's that rising up in our spirit. So, let's talk a little bit about the logistics of running a busy household. You've got a lot of people to manage mm-hmm. in your home. So, just... I know the listeners would love to hear a couple of practical ways that you have found success in managing a household over the years.
Okay. Well, while I am not very organized in that sense, I am, it's interesting. I am very, I have rhythms. I believe in rhythms. So yes, we have 8 kids, and most of their lives, they were all homeschooled. So everybody was home with me too. And so we had rhythms of what our mornings, and I just worked everything in rhythms of what do I want my days to look like? Not so much because 8 o'clock, everybody needs to be doing X, but so that number one, everybody knows that around the 8 o'clock hour, this is what everybody's expected to do and have done. And so for me, that was one thing, is taking the time to look at the season of life I'm in right now and go, what are going to be the best rhythms for my family right now? And when we would have a new baby, rhythms would change. So it doesn't make any sense for us to have the rhythms when I was pregnant, when I'm now dealing with a newborn. All rhythms must change. So I think one thing that's a tip that I would tell somebody is be really aware that your rhythms of life probably will need to change and could change month to month. And that is okay. And instead, give yourself the flexibility and the freedom to pivot and to say, wow, it's not working for us to have, like, I counsel moms a lot about, because they're like, well, I want to do like a morning meeting or a morning devotional, and I want it every morning. And we had seasons where I'm like, it is not practical for that to be at 8 o'clock in our breakfast time, because that's when the baby is just losing his or her mind. But the baby's down for a nap somewhere between 9:30 and 10:30. And so that's when we can do that. And so maybe at 8 o'clock, with our breakfast now in this rhythm, everybody should just get their math out and do their math while I'm handling fussy man over here, for instance. And then as kids get older, understanding that rhythms, they just continually change. So for me, one of the biggest tips I had, or one of the biggest things, is just understanding that there's great freedom to change. And then a second thing for me with all of our kids was always feeding them. And so we had some like maybe rules about feeding. And number one is like, you're going to eat what you're served.
Yeah.
And you're going to be grateful. Like, we're not a smorgasbord. So we're going to be grateful. There's going to be something there that you're going to like, but I'm also not going to hold it personally, my job to make sure like you filled up. So if you didn't eat, okay. But I also didn't feed you again until the next meal. And then it was like what it was. So yeah. Like, cause for me, it could be really all consuming if everybody's always snacking and eating, yeah. And I got trapped in that. Like, I learned this by going, wait a minute, we can just eat what I decide, when I decide what we're eating. And, so that, and then of course, inside of that, I was a huge, especially when I had all 8 and everybody was young and little, we did meal planning and we did huge preps. Like meal preps. Yeah.
Like, did you do once a week or did maybe once a month or?
I love doing once a month. It required like Troy to be home. So, or I have an amazing sister who I would call and be like, hey, you want to come down for the weekend? I really want to do my once a month prep work. And she'd be like, sure. She'd come down and we'd cook all the meats and all the, like, I really believed in a lot of that. It helped me immensely.
Okay, good. Yes. I'm a big fan of meal planning and prepping in a way that works for you. So
yes.
You know, again, like you said, with the rhythms, that even applies to what you do for your meal planning. If you may not have the space in the season that you're in right now to do a once a month cooking, because it's not just the day that you're cooking. It's, you got to figure out once a month worth, you know, a month of meals. Then you got to go shopping for all that stuff. Yep. And then, you know, it's like a multi-day event.
Yeah, it's like a thing. It's a thing. You have to gear up for it.
Right. So finding which systems are going to work best in what rhythms, depending on what season you're in. It's all dependent and it's going to change. I mean, if that's the one thing we can depend on in our lives as homemakers, is it'll change. The seasons will change and your needs will change and things will change.
Yes.
So being flexible is super important. So those are great suggestions and great points. Well, let's talk about challenges for a minute. Were there any special challenges other than managing a household of 10 people? Any other special challenges that you've had to work through in your homemaking journey? And how did God help you work through that? What did He teach you through that? How did you grow?
I think one thing that has been a challenge for me in homemaking is communication. So, and what I mean by that is learning to be a really good communicator with everybody around me. So I have a tendency to know what needs to be done, and I'm just going to go and get it done. And so I'm going to own all the tasks. I'm going to get all the work done because I can get it done fast. I can get it done quick. I can run the list because the list is in my head. And I know today we have to do this, 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 and this. And I can shift into being a little bit of a drill sergeant, and then also be annoyed because how can they not see what we have to get done? But I have failed to communicate any of it. And learning, and that has really probably, as I reflect, that's probably been the source of the biggest bad days, you know, of it may be that I'm just holding in my head, we've got all these activities, we've got all this school to do, we've got all these chores in the home to do, we've got to be here at this time and here at this time, and we've got a doctor's appointment, and lo and behold, I think this kid might be sick, and it's all running through my head. So now I'm rifling through everything and figuring out the sequencing and figuring out and triaging, but I'm not communicating. And that, and learning the necessity of delegation in kindness and communicating with clarity is been probably the biggest learning place for me. Because I do depend on myself, and I have high capacity, and I usually do pretty well. Like, I'm a pretty high performer. So learning, well, just because you can perform well, just because you can hold it all, doesn't mean you should, because you're killing people all around you in a mm-hmm. relationship. Mm-hmm. So,
right. Which leads to the next question. How did you invite your kids in participating in homemaking with you? And if you're not delegating and inviting them in with kindness, you're not doing that.
You're not doing it. No, I was owning it all.
Yeah.
And So I had a really good older mom who spent time with me when my oldest was, I think Noah was around 5 or 6 when she came into my life. And she had 10 kids. I'd never known any. First of all, I had no plan to have 8 kids. It was not something we thought we would do. Probably when Noah was 5, I had 4, was almost. Yeah. And I was going to be soon pregnant, but I didn't know I was going to be pregnant. We had 4 kids. And I remember thinking, oh my gosh, I mean, I've got so many kids. This is crazy. And this older mom came into my life because one of her oldest was like a magical babysitter. And so I was using her for like a date night once a week. And she was magical with my kids. And I was just watching this girl. I mean, like, I still remember her name. Her name was Jessie. And I just remember watching Jessie with my kids and being like, how did you grow up to be so amazing?
Yeah.
And I asked her, when I said, you think your mom would ever like let me learn from her? And because remember, I had learned the value of putting myself around people who knew more than I did. And she's like, sure. She has moms in her house all the time. And I'm like, oh, I'm going to come over. And her mom like calls me the next day and says, Jesse tells me you'd like to come over. I'm like, yeah.
Yes, please.
So, yes. And so, but she told me, she looked at me. So at this point we had a 5-year-old, a 4-year-old, a 2-year-old, and an infant. And she looks at me and she goes, Bethany, parenting is hard. Motherhood is really hard. She said, but the Amish have a saying that I really believe in. And I said, well, what is their saying? And she said, you invest in a child for 9 years and they will invest in you for a lifetime. And I said, well, okay. And I think she could tell that it was like not translating.
Like, what does that mean?
Yeah.
I know it's supposed to be good, but I don't know. But you've got Jessie and she's magical. And I just want people to be like Jessie. And she said,
and Bethany, what that really means is up until the age of 9, your children are just massive learners and absorbers. And you're having to do most everything. But you're teaching all along the way and you're letting them loose at 9. She goes, so at 9 years old, all my kids sort their laundry. All my kids do the dishes. All my kids do this. They do this. And she just starts naming all these things. And I'm like, they do? And, you know, I'm looking at my 5-year-old going, no way.
That's not happening in 4 years.
I know. No. Like, we got a long way to go. But that saying began to just go through my head. And it was this place of, well, maybe I can help. Maybe he can help me sort laundry. And I would just bring all the laundry down in the living room and be like, I need a darks, a lights, and a towels. Handle that for me. And then I would have him drag the buckets in the laundry room and I would pitch him, and so we began to do these places of, and I realized, you know, they can unload the dishwasher and just stack it all on the counter. Because they're not tall enough maybe to put it away, but they can stack it all on the counter. That saves me a step. And it's learning. So it may not be like ideal. And yeah, probably glasses broke, but it wasn't a big deal. But I began to learn, oh, this is what they can do. And so my kids, like one of my kids, I remember one of their favorite tasks, like right after that, I was wiping baseboards.
Good. That's great.
Loved it. It was like a game. I would give everybody a washcloth and I'd be like, come back to me when you need more Indus. So all these little, and I just turn on like all this music in the house and everybody's just like dancing and scrubbing baseboards.
Oh, awesome.
But yeah, you know, you just kind of shift your mindset a little bit.
Yes, yes, yes. Shift your mindset to, I think you have to shift it in two ways. You have to shift it, lower your expectations a little bit. Mm-hmm. Like you said, it's not necessarily going to be ideal, but remember that you're investing in teaching them, you know, just the work ethic, just actually let's work together and do something. Then the skill will come, but also recognizing that they can do more than we think that they can.
Yes. You know. And that they can be proud of it.
Yes.
So when daddy came home, they were proud of their baseboards. There were stories about, like, I'm in charge of the dishes this week, you know, and those are moments of pride for them.
We're sort of robbing them of that if we don't invite them in. So, okay. We're sort of in the area of hospitality because I feel like that's an inviting your kids in to participate in the homemaking is a way to show hospitality to them. But let's talk about the people that are not in your family, in your home, the people outside the four walls of your home. What are some of the ways that you have practiced hospitality in your home?
Well, we love having people in our home. I don't know if you can tell, but like, that's my personality. So I think that we have sought though to choose to be hospitable, but not shifting who we are. So when you're invited into my home after, I don't know, Sunday night church or, you know, on a random weeknight for a meal, I mean, there's probably going to be toys on the ground. I mean, like, we're going to try and pick up. Like, we're going to learn the art of, hey, we want to make our guests feel welcome, so we're not going to have, like, our dirty underwear on the ground and wet towels. Right. But the reality is, when there were 8 kids, there probably was a ball on the ground. There probably was a doll on the ground somewhere. There was, my children were running around like it wasn't going to be a pristine meal event with quiet talking. But Troy and I really have always sought to invest in people. And so we have seen hospitality as the avenue to be purposeful with people. And we have a conversation of who are the people we're investing in this season of our life. And instead of having 10 different people in our home 10 different times, we like to look and say, who can we be purposeful to? Who is God saying these are the people to invest in? And it may be 3 to 5 couples, and we're more purposeful with having them over more frequently so that there is time spent and good conversations had. And the other thing about hospitality that I have learned over the years is I really want somebody to walk into my home and feel welcome and to breathe out. And for her specifically to believe, oh, she's just like me. So I think there's great value and beauty even in not always having everything all put together. Not being a mess, but being willing to say, and so I actually, so if you come to my home, if I've invited you to my home, this is a trick. So if you come to my home and you experience this, you'll be like, ah, she's tricking me. But I will purposefully, I throw big Christmas parties where I serve dinners for 20 people. Like I love having people over and entertaining, love it. But I, every time, will not be running on time. And it's on purpose. So that when those first 2 to 4 couples come in and the wife specifically looks around, and usually when you walk into somebody else's home and you know you're coming to a dinner party and there's going to be a lot of people there, and you walk in and everything's just amazing, you immediately begin to go, oh, I could never do this. But if you walk in and I'm like, hey, I'm running a little bit behind, do you think there would be any way you could check this in the oven for me? Or, hey, I haven't yet had chance to fill the water cups. Could you do that for me? Do you mind? And then we can talk while you're doing it. The girl goes, oh, yeah, I can help. And she's just like me. I mean, like, I wouldn't eat. And it is a trick. But truly, I probably am running behind because it is crazy. It's always crazy. And there's 8 kids. And I've probably been having to be in the bathroom talking to somebody because it's always when I'm throwing a party or having a big bunch of people over that one of my kids is totally misbehaving and I got to go talk to them instead. So I am
bleeding.
Or yeah, or having some issue that's just really wrecking their world. It's going to happen. So I am genuinely probably running behind. But I have absolutely no qualms. In fact, I believe it's very healthy to ask the people around you, hey, we're about to have a great night together, but I'm going to need a little help to get it all together. So for me, that part of hospitality usually makes people feel like, I love being in your home, Bethany, because I just feel like I can relax there.
Right. No, I think that is such a great suggestion. And it instantly puts people at ease because you're inviting them in to participate in the meal, in the prep, it's like they're one of the family. Mm-hmm. You're not just, you go sit here on this chair and there's a place for, you want to serve your guests, but that little bit of letting them, because I feel like as a woman, when I host, people come in and usually, we don't do super formal events. So usually if it's couples or whatever, everybody gravitates to the kitchen and the mm-hmm. ladies are always like, what can I do? What can I do? What can I do? Mm-hmm. You know, they're always at, okay, well here, the tea's not ready yet. Can you go stir, put the sugar in the tea, you know, whatever.
Yep.
Little things like that. And it really is helpful for you as a hostess to not stress yourself out to like every last detail has to be done before the doorbell rings with the first guests.
Yeah.
So I think that's a win-win for everybody. Great suggestion. Very good. Okay. I want to move on to talk about seasons in homemaking. Like, as we've already talked about this, that things are going to change. They're always changing year to year, sometimes week to week.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So what would you say has been the most difficult transition through a season for you in homemaking? And how did you kind of work through that?
I think our most difficult season in our home was really when we went through a year and a half where it was just really, really hard in our home. And I can't give you a reason why, except we basically had a child in almost every category of life. So I think that was part of it. I mean, we had a newborn, a 2-year-old, a 4-year-old, a 6-year-old, an 8-year-old, a 10-year-old, a 12-year-old. I mean, like we had a lot of kids and we had all the way up to a 17-year-old. We also had some real big medical diagnoses happening in that year. We had a child with a traumatic brain injury and another child with a medical disorder that made him very medically fragile for about 8 months that nobody could explain, like medicine couldn't explain. So it was pretty high stressful. And so there's a speed of life that happens that is coupled with just the stress of not knowing. Like, so we didn't know with our kid with the brain injury, we weren't sure we were going to get who he was before back and didn't get that answer. We didn't get that answer for almost 3 years, but and then the child with the medical condition, you know, medicine's kind of going, I don't know. And you're like, why do you not know? Like, how do you not know? And then you're, you know, you have a baby and you have a toddler you're trying to potty train, like things, like you have life.
Yeah, like life is still happening.
Yeah. And then inside of that, then there's another teenager who is struggling with her value and her worth and just getting her lunch eaten by lies and social pressure. And so I think in that season, what begins to happen is you're like, I am not doing anything well. And so everything kind of tumbles where you're not winning on the parenting front. Your life is moving at such a pace because all you're really doing is putting out fires. So you're beginning to really crumble on the home front, like home is falling apart, can't get any of the laundry done. And usually for me, laundry to me is a high signal that my life is out of control. Oh.
When it's the canary in the coal mine.
It is. So, you know, laundry is when laundry has literally, like, you're climbing on stacks of clothes in the laundry room and there's laundry now in the hallway. And in my head, what begins to pound in my head is you are not, like, what in the, you're handling nothing. And then eating becomes just a scrambled mess instead of a time of joining together and enjoying one another. And then, you know, so it's like it begins snowballs. To spiral out of control. And so that was a good year and a half for us. That for me was probably harder than even when my kids left home. Harder than even the seasons where I've had to get married now and juggling those kinds of seasons. That was probably the hardest season, was just because you're walking through like unknowns. So emotionally you begin to get spent. So it doesn't have to be that, it doesn't have to be your story, but it's when you're walking through unknowns, I think, and you begin to hear lies that say, this is all your fault, or you're not doing it well, or you're just messing it up. So then anything that you maybe can get a small win on, you have a negative filter that covers it that says you can't win. And for me, that was probably the worst season.
Yeah. So where did your ministry come in there? Because let me tell everybody what the name of your podcast, because you have a podcast. Mm-hmm. And it is called Warrior Mama?
Yeah. Warrior Mama podcast.
Warrior Mama. So I wanted to hear when was Warrior Mama born, and why? And was it out of that season or was it out of something else?
I think my public facing ministry came out of that season. So for years I had been having, because of really that mom who poured into me when my kids were so little, I began to really understand and embrace the fact that I could be doing the same. Like, I wouldn't want another mom not having somebody older than her going, hey, like, you can do this. It's hard, but you can do it. And so I had a private, like, I would have women in my home and I would do Bible studies in my home on my back porch and do things like that. And the Lord began to say, you know, we're going to bring this public. And we're going to bring it public because you have been in really dark places and the gospel is what has set you free and brought you out. And so sharing that and teaching that to others will set them free and show them that it's in my word and it's in time with me, God speaking, that will bring confidence and peace and hope rather than feeling lost and overwhelmed, totally discouraged and wanting to quit, which is what I, you know, kind of felt like for a while there. So that's where the ministry came from. I began to write publicly. That's where the prayer journal was birthed, for instance, that I have, was just in that season of going, well, what does it mean to walk this way?
And your prayer journal just came out this fall, right? You had just, when I saw you at the conference, it had just come out. And it is a beautiful book. I have a copy. It's a beautiful linen covered book. And if you want to talk about that really quickly, because I think it would be very valuable to our audience.
Sure. It's called A Warrior Mama's Prayers. And the design of this book is to teach you a rhythm of praying scripture for your child month after month for a full year. Every month you return to the same idea on the same day. So like if it's the third of the month, you'll go back to day three and look at what was written on that day, and you'll see what you prayed the month before. And you'll see the scriptures that you can with confidence stand on and pray for your child and journal again. And for me, it came because in that year and a half, I wasn't sure. And I was hearing the lies that God doesn't really care. Like he's not interested. Like, I know you've got this kid who's medically fragile, but see, medicine can't solve it. Nobody can solve it. Maybe God turned his head. And I knew that wasn't true, but I also didn't feel like we were getting any traction. Like I was like, mentally I choose, no, it's not true, but God, it feels true. It feels true right now. And the Lord beginning to say, let me show you how we can pray and you can watch me work and you can capture what is happening from month to month. So in this journal, we pray over four main pillars. We pray that the gospel will become clear to your child, that they'll understand who God is and who Jesus is and what that means. And we pray 7 days of concept prayers about the gospel. And we pray about your child's character. We're praying for their integrity, that they'll walk in love and in kindness and in peace. And so we're praying in truth. And then the third week, we're praying for the spiritual battle that's around your child, both now and into the future. And then the fourth week, we're praying that they will learn to walk with Jesus. And that means good decision-making, who they choose as friends, like the big things about life that sometimes the enemy for me could, with 8 kids, it was almost like the lies I would hear is like, I don't think you've ever prayed that for that kid. I don't think you've ever thought about that. Like it just, and number one, God doesn't, he's not holding a tablet up there going, well, you never prayed it, so I'm not answering it. Like, that's a lie. That's not God's heart. But God's heart is one of invitation of, hey, you come partner with me and let's pray about these things and watch me work. Because really, your prayer life, God, number one, loves your prayers. He holds on to all of your prayers and he will answer every prayer. But he also uses your prayer life to make you go deeper with him yourself. And I think for me, that was probably the most powerful part about it is my deep love and affection for God got bigger.
That's really powerful. Well, I just want to encourage everybody to check this book out because I talk about this a lot on the podcast that our memories are fickle things. And we think we're going to remember, you know, like good things. We think we're going to remember which kid said, you know, this word in this funny way or which all those little memories and you think, I'll never forget that. You will.
You will.
So write them down. Yes. So we talk a lot about writing things down and not everybody is, you know, I'm just not a journaler. That's not, you know, something I just doesn't come naturally to me or whatever. But what I love about this book is it's very much a guided, you're not looking at a blank sheet of paper and being like, oh, I have to write something down. You know, you have guided us through each of these pillars and it's over the course of the whole year, but it's great because it's repetitive. You keep coming back and covering that same ground. And I know that every time you cover it, God's going to show you something different. So well done. It's a beautiful book and we'll make sure that we link that in the notes so that everybody can get their hands on a copy of that. But I know we're going to have to let you go here really soon. So I want to get to the rapid fire questions because this is my favorite part. I love to hear these stories. Tell me about your worst homemaking fail.
I think it's ongoing. I am the worst. Like my kids can't stand it. My grown girls. I have an outside refrigerator and things go there and they die.
Oh.
And I can't get a hold of it. I can't get a handle on it. I would love a good system for that. I have one daughter who's highly organized, and she's given me a new system in the last 6 months. It's going better than any other system, but like, it's super embarrassing. Like, I will have, like, I'm embarrassed, but I'm just going to say it. No shame here. I will literally have, the last time that daughter came home from college, she's like, I'm cleaning this junk out. This is disgusting. And there was like yogurt from a year and a half ago.
Oh, oh no.
Like, just kept being pushed to the back of the fridge. She's like, what is happening out here? And I'm like, I don't know. I don't know. I just ignore it. She's like, what do you think? It's just going to go away. I'm like, well, you came home and it's going.
Oh my God.
It's super embarrassing. But, you know, again, I just want to say to the person who maybe isn't as, all of you can feel better than me. So that's right. Good. But if you're not, like, it's not a high skill, surround yourself with people that it is.
Yeah.
Let them help you.
Yes, definitely. Okay, how about a memorable homemaking achievement?
I think I thought about this question, and I think the achievement that I will hold as maybe the most memorable is the ability, because I had to do it a lot. So we had obviously 8 kids, and flipping rooms around and redesigning who's sleeping with who and how they're doing it in a way that makes that bedroom really fun for them and for those kids to share. Because we probably flip rooms about every, I don't know, year, 6. I mean, like, we flip rooms a lot and move these 2 girls in. Then we move these 3 girls in. Then we did move those 2 and they were out of birth order in together. And then, and I think the reason I call it an achievement is when all my kids are together now. Like, remember when you and I lived together and we had so much fun because we did this? And then somebody was like, yeah, but when I lived with them, it was like this, you know? So I think I'm going to call that one of my biggest achievements. I didn't know until now that I see them loaded with memories of living with different siblings. And
yeah, no, that's a great one. That's a good one. Good. Okay. How about your favorite homemaking hack or tip?
I would say room time. So room time is with all my children, and I can still do it with my big kids even now to this day because they're kind of trained in it. But I start room time with little bitty babies when they're in a little bit, one of their play times, they get to play like in their crib, and I put in their crib a bunch of fun toys for them to play with. And then as they grow up, they move from crib to maybe a pack and play, and from pack and play ultimately to a room where they're playing independently by themselves. And so I would have, therefore, and my goal was always with every child to be able to have them have the room time muscles to play for 45 minutes to an hour. And I would have of my day, I would literally have all of my children in different room time areas. And they would play so that I needed time to just, you know, not, and I chose to hold that time pretty sacred. I didn't go fill it with a bunch of chores for myself. I also tried really hard not to empty my brain. There were definitely days where I just sat in front of a TV. I'm not going to say I didn't, but like, I tried to do something like a good read, like something I enjoyed doing, not a chore.
Something that would fill you back up. Yeah.
Don't go scrub your bathtub in that room time. I'll do that.
That's a great tip. I love that. Training their room time muscles. That's a good way to put it. Okay. How about a homemaking tool or product that you're loving right now?
Well, I love my wireless vacuum, like my little battery power that I can just grab and go with. That's probably, like, tool wise, my absolute favorite tool. I don't have any, like, cooking tools that I just love. Like, I just would rather just cook, like, on a stove, like, in real stuff. Not like I'm not a rice maker person or something. Like,
yeah,
I don't have any.
You're not a gadget.
I'm not a gadget girl, and I'm not really, like, a super coffee drinker. Like, I do have one of my friends. I did ask that question. One of my friends said, oh, my espresso blah, blah, blah machine. I'm like, oh, I don't have one of those. I don't care about that.
That's not important to me.
Love my vacuum that can go anywhere in the house.
I love
anybody
that
can use it. Like
yes, because they're lightweight.
Little so people great. Can use it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And they love to use it too.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
It's, it's exciting. It makes noise and makes lines on the carpet. It's great.
Yeah.
Okay. Tell me, what is your signature dish?
Okay. My kids would say my signature dish is chicken pot pie. And the reason is because I do not put any vegetables in my chicken pot pie. And the reason for that is because a long time ago, remember when I was talking about like, I'm going to cook and you're going to eat it? I realized that every time I made chicken pot pie, like the way my mom made it, my kids like spent the whole meal separating everything. And I'm like, but they like peas. And they like peas and they like carrots, but kids don't like it mixed.
It's not together.
I'm like, why am I mixing it? So, I'm not kidding. Like I have people like, cause now it's like pretty standard. I'm going to bring that to a new mom because she can eat it no matter what. Like it's safe for her to eat. Like it's not going to upset a baby if she's nursing. And, I mean, I have people who request that from me and I'm like, this is a joke. Listen, literally all I did was take the vegetables out. But hands down, when my kids come home from college, when my kids come home from life, they're like, can you make chicken pot pie? I'm like, sure.
Okay.
So that's not what I would say my signature dish is, but that's what everybody else would say it is.
What would you say?
I vacillate. I think I make a really, really good beef tenderloin, like a really fancy meal. Like I think I make a killer one. And then I have a really good risotto recipe that I love. But yeah.
Oh, I love that. Okay. So would you share one of those, either the pot pie or maybe the risotto with us?
Yeah.
Oh, that'd be awesome. Okay. Because I like to put the signature dish out in the newsletter that'll come out right after your episode airs and we share that with everybody.
The chicken pot pie people will be like, well, this is
get a pie shell and put some chicken in it.
she just took the vegetables out. But your kids won't pick it apart.
That's right.
And then just put the peas on the side. Put the green peas on the side.
I was
going to
ask, do you just serve the veggies
separately? Yeah.
There you go.
It works.
All right. Let's talk about the art of home. How do you see homemaking as an art? Where do you see the beauty in it?
Mm-hmm. I see it as a beautiful reflection of Jesus washing people's feet. Like, I just see this whole space, no matter what part of it you want to touch, we get to choose to serve. And the choice of how we serve is really a heart posture. And so for me, I see the art in it of not, I just got to get it finished. I got to get it done. But how can I do this in a way that shows that I absolutely love this person that I'm doing this for? So it's not just I'm washing your clothes, but I'm going to wash them and I'm going to fold them the way you like them to be folded. Like, you know, I have different kids who, like when they do their own laundry, they'll fold their shirts a certain way. And it's the art of homemaking for me, for instance, is little things like that, is noticing what they actually like. So like a couple of my boys like their shirt sleeves folded in. And my girls like it more like a gap fold. And like, you know, they have different folds. And it's just honoring them, like to fold their laundry. If I'm going to fold their laundry because I'm going to surprise them and I'm going to fold it, it's honoring them and how I do that kind of thing. It's in the little spaces of making a point of making the meals that people love. And to me, it's the art of it is in the honor.
Isn't there a verse that says to outdo one another in showing honor?
Yeah, and showing love. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Let's talk to the younger women who are listening. What is a word of advice, word of wisdom, or warning that you would give to the younger women who are coming behind you as they journey through their art of making a home?
Keep your eyes on Jesus and not on your social media. You don't need to compare. Just ask him to lead you. See, I learned homemaking without having to compare myself to everybody else homemaking.
in everybody's staged picture. So my house is messy. My house is messy 90% of the time. My house has, we have a golden retriever. It's going to have dog hair on it until I get that wireless vacuum out. But if I spent my time comparing, it would be a never-ending, discouraging journey.
Definitely.
Yeah.
That's a good word. Well, how can listeners get in touch with you? Where's the best place for them to find you?
The best place you can find me is on Instagram. You can find me on Facebook. I'm there, Bethany Kimsey. I'm on Instagram at Bethany Kimsey, and that's the easiest. Like, I'm very active there. Send me a DM. I'll talk to you. Then you can find me on my website, BethanyKimsey.com.
And what do you have coming up besides your Warrior Mama prayer book? You have like a, I was just kind of poking around on your website. You have like a, is it like a community on your Warrior Mama? Okay. Mm-hmm. Can you tell me a little bit about that before we
sure.
close?
Yeah, I have. It's called the Warrior Motherhood Community, and it's designed for mothers to find, to learn how to parent with a gospel intention, but together. So remember when Moses was holding up the banner when Israel was having to fight against King Amalek? They had just come out of captivity in Egypt. Nobody was a warrior. So they're all having to fight. They're basically fighting for their lives. And God basically says to Moses, stand up on this hill and hold up the banner. And as the banner was held up, Israel would be winning in the valley. When Moses' arms got tired and, you know, they kind of fell down, there was loss and defeat was happening. So Aaron and Hur, like, they're like watching this. They're like, oh my goodness, we got to keep his arms up. And he can't keep his arms up. He's exhausted. So the goal of the community really is to come alongside of moms and say, we're going to help you hold your arms up while you hold up the gospel in your home. And so we're going to walk with you and teach you how to do this. We're going to equip you. We're going to, we have a board. So we have a bunch of women in there who work and teach in there. We partner with a Christian counseling group for women so that, you know, if it's more that's needed, we can help you route and find great help. Yeah, it's a beautiful place. Yeah.
Is it ongoing? Is it open all the time to join, or do you have seasons?
We have seasons. It opens, it opens seasonally, and we have a special wait list. So if you wanted to get on that, now you would absolutely be notified. Our next opening will be in January.
Okay. This is going to air in January, actually.
Okay. Then it'll be open. It'll probably be open in January, but there is a wait list too that helps a woman get on it easily. So
great. Yeah. Okay. Well, we'll make sure that we have all those links down in the show notes. Bethany, thank you so much for joining me today and sharing all of your amazing stories. I had lots more questions to ask you, but we have run out of time.
That's
but
okay.
Thank you.
This was fun.
Thank you.
I'm so
glad.
It was so much fun. I loved it.
Good.
Thank you so much for listening to this Homemaker Portrait of Bethany Kimsey. I hope it has encouraged and inspired you, and that you can take one or two nuggets of wisdom from Bethany and apply them in your own practice of the art of home. There was so much good stuff in this conversation. It's really hard for me to pick a favorite nugget or two, but I'll give it a shot. I would say my top takeaways are, number one, don't expect to be good at everything in the home. Instead, recognize your weaknesses and always adopt a posture of learning. Reach out to others who can teach you, because the alternative is to live in chaos. And then number two, the home flows in rhythms based on the season of life you are in. So pay attention to that and adjust accordingly. Don't forget, there is great freedom to change your rhythms. Give yourself the flexibility and freedom to pivot as needed. I particularly love this second takeaway because, as you may know, rhythms and routines are the third of four pillars of homemaking that we are exploring here on The Art of Home. Last year, we dove deep into pillar one and two, identity and values and priorities, respectively. And this year, we will be diving into pillars three and four. We will tackle rhythms and routines next season, and then the final pillar, community, later on in the year. If you missed the episodes highlighting Pillar 1 and 2, be sure to give those a listen. Or if you did catch them, I believe a refresher would be time well spent. I will link them in the description box for this episode. Be sure also to check out Bethany's links down in the description box. Follow her on Instagram and definitely check out her show, Warrior Mama Podcast. I know you will be blessed by her teaching. If you have found value in today's episode, you can say thank you by sharing The Art of Home with a friend, by leaving us a rating and a review on your listening app, and supporting The Art of Home ministry through Buy Me a Coffee, either as a one-time tip or as a monthly Titus 2 Woman supporter. Thank you so much for all of your support, helpful reviews, and kind messages. I appreciate you all. Well, that's it for this episode of The Art of Home. Be sure to sign up for Homemaker Happy Mail, and I will be back next week with a deep dive into dealing with emergencies in the home with Elizabeth Dillard. Until then, keep practicing your art of making a home.